Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, stream our show at nprnews.org/listen live every weekday at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the show.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. Good to have you tuned into NPR News today. Planes, trains, automobiles are chugging again as we plan the getaways that many of us were denied last summer. This is a show with a lot of advice on how to travel after the pandemic, but we're also going to explore why we travel and the ways that that purpose has been shaped by this experience. Two guests, I'd really like to hear from you on this. What do you want out of the exploration you'll do inside the United States and beyond our borders? I'm wondering if the purpose and the intention with which you travel has become more defined. Has it changed somehow? And then, of course, we'll take your questions and your comments about post-pandemic travel overall. But I'd like to you to think about if you are considering travel in some different ways. That it used to be maybe a checklist. I've got to see that. I got to go there. I got to do this. Are you thinking differently about this in this year that we've stayed home? And oh my gosh, many of us are really eager to get back out on the road. How are you thinking about that differently? 651-227-6000-800-242-2828, and you can tweet me at @CarrieMPR. Kyle Potter is with us. He's executive editor of The Thrifty Traveler, and he's with us from Minneapolis. And Kyle, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you here.
Good to be here, Carrie.
Bianca Alexander is with us. She's the creative director and host of Conscious Living, now airing on PBS stations nationwide, and she's with us from a very toasty Palm Springs. Hi, Bianca. Good to have you on the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. Yes, it's already toasty here
I'll bet. Bianca, I've been thinking about what it means that this pandemic was a global experience. I think many of us were tuned in to, I hope, with awareness and compassion to what was happening in different places around the world. We're hearing news out of Africa. We know what's been going on in India. And I've been thinking about how that's going to affect the way I travel again, these different places that I'm going to. And I wonder if you've given any thought to that, too.
Absolutely. I mean, if anything, what the past year has taught us is that we can't keep doing things the way we've done them before. We've had to change everything about how we shop, about how we eat, how many times we wash our hands, and obviously traveling has been limited significantly. And so now as we emerge from this crazy time, it's an opportunity to take the lessons that we've learned during the pandemic out into the world when we travel, and doing so hopefully more mindfully.
Yeah. Let me grab a call here from Cindy in Minneapolis. Hi, Cindy. I'm really glad you called early. It sounds like you've been giving some thought to this. What have you come up with?
Hi. So this is mostly to answer your question in terms of intent of travel. But for me personally, I am in grad school right now.
Uh-huh.
And so for a lot of grad students, if we do travel, it's mostly to present research, whether you're in the humanities or the sciences. And the pandemic has actually forced a lot of scientific or research communities to actually pursue virtual means of presenting your work.
For example, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was just going to say, like presenting, for example, a poster by doing screen share online or giving a scientific presentation via Zoom or something like that.
And do you think that that's going to continue when, you know, many different places in the world are vaccinated and it feels like the pandemic has really receded, Cindy?
I think so, because from an equity standpoint, it makes it a lot more accessible for everyone to be presenting their research and talking with people, even if you lack the financial means to, say, get a really expensive plane ticket and all that.
Right. Okay. I'm really glad you called because I wanted to ask Kyle about business travel. And Kyle, we might as well plunge into that. I was looking at a report out of McKinsey that is predicting that business travel is going to take a long time to recover. And I wonder if that's part of what Cindy just said. You know, we can do this via Zoom, and companies are realizing, and maybe academic institutions are realizing, you can save a lot of money. What are you seeing in the trend?
There's no question that, you know, the travel that we've seen come back within the past couple of months in particular has been, you know, everyday travelers who are going out to see friends and family or going on a vacation, and not the business travelers who, you know, just have a briefcase in hand and are going for a meeting or going to present their research. And that is going to take time. But if you think this time last year, you know, people were ready to declare the end of all business travel.
That's right.
Because of Zoom. And, you know, what we've seen is a couple of things. First, business travel, while it's going to take time to come back, you know, maybe a couple of years, it is going to come back. Maybe not to 100%, but maybe to 70, 80% of where it was prior to the pandemic. But people have short memories. You know, everyone is going to be eager to, you know, to put this last year behind them. And people are going to be eager to get back out there. And that's true of people who, you know, just need to take a vacation and get away from work. And it's also true for people who need to go see clients and you know, make warehouse visits and all of the things that, you know, add up into, you know, the 100% of travel that, you know, a lot of people are itching to get back to.
You know, I'm kind of surprised to hear you saying that you think business travel comes back up to 75 to 80%. I mean, this is a big cost saving, isn't it, for organizations who may also, you know, have some intentions around trying to decrease greenhouse warming? I mean, there's a lot of reasons for a company to say, let's really reassess how often we have to put employees on a plane. So why are you so confident it comes back at that level?
A couple of things. The first is that, you know, while it's slowly coming back, you know, the airlines have said they're already starting to see business travel come back faster than they anticipated, certainly much faster and at a much, you know, higher level than what they were anticipating this time last year. But the other part of it is that I think, you know, some of the, you know, one day trips to London or New York City or wherever, you know, a lot of those are probably going to be what we see get cut, but they're, you know, I think what's going to happen is the first time that, you know, these companies decide, you know what, yes, we do need to somewhat send one of our employees out somewhere. That's going to be a turning point for a lot of these companies and the employees themselves that helps them justify getting back somewhere close to normal in business travel.
Yeah, Bianca, I'm curious about how you think companies may assess, again, not just the cost savings, but some of the things that you think about, the effect on the climate, the necessity of really flying in for a two-day meeting and everything that that entails, you know, also on kind of quality of life, right, and employees' own personal lives. What do you think they're assessing on this?
Well, you know, we have to be aware of some basic statistics in terms of global warming. You know, tourism and travel is responsible for 8% of global greenhouse gas emissions. And, you know, 40% of the global footprint of tourism is transportation. And so thinking about more mindful ways to travel that are not going to increase our carbon footprint is something I think we've all learned from the pandemic. I mean, one of the first sort of silver linings that came out of this was the fact that the oceans cleaned up and the air cleared out, you know, early on in the pandemic when people weren't traveling. And so I think it'd be impossible for businesses and companies and individuals not to consider, you know, being more conservative in terms of how we're consuming carbon and how we're emitting toxins into the atmosphere by, first of all, you know, offsetting carbon. You know, I mean, obviously, if you can minimize your travel, that's great. But, you know, we've all been cooped up for a year. We want to see each other and interact. So doing so in a way that offsets the footprint is something that we can think of. I mean, obviously, there's many things and hotels that are green and pride themselves in conserving water and energy and recycling products and using local, you know, plant-based cuisine on their menus. So there's a lot of different ways that we can still travel and do so in a way that minimizes the overall impact.
You know, it's interesting because I was reading a story about what has happened inside animal reserves and inside some zoos and how there's been this explosion of animal breeding because the animals have not had, you know, humans watching them. The intrusion from humans has been really minimal, and it's clearly a much more healthy atmosphere for animals that are kept in some kind of captivity. Just a small example, though, Bianca, of how, I mean, that's a double-edged sword. These zoos can only do the work that they do because people support them with ticket prices and travel to come see them. And yet when you look at the impact of less human intrusion, it's really compelling. What occurs to you about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to ignore what we've learned in the past year. And again, the silver lining from, you know, this very traumatic and sad experience for all of us is the opportunity to really take the hard won lessons we've learned over the past year in terms of how we can move through the world more mindfully out into, you know, the years to come. And, you know, to not go back to how we did things before, because really the fact is there's no way to go back. The world is not going to return 100% to what it was before. I mean, we're all working from home. The option to do so was not as available as it is now. And so, you know, continuing to move forward and evolve as a society and as a planet will not only, you know, ensure that we have a healthy planet here for generations to come, but also makes us healthier as beings. And I think, you know, not ignoring those wonderful lessons is going to, you know, make the world a better place and make travel as a whole more mindful. I mean, think about the things that are happening with people sort of unraveling, you know, on planes. We've heard about a few things in the past weeks. It's just because of, you know, sort of that lack of mindfulness and being aware of, you know, what is our state of mind and using meditative practices and other mindful approaches to, you know, be more introspective and more considerate of, you know, how we're taking care of ourselves and how we're impacting others.
Kyle, where do you think some of the real fundamental changes in the travel industry have happened that are, you know, that are potentially long lasting?
You know, I think that the biggest one, you know, the biggest thing that people are going to see still today is masks. Masks are still required, you know, not just on airplanes and in airports, but basically all forms of public transit. And that's going to be the case, at least currently, through, you know, all the way through the summer travel season into mid-September. Beyond that, though, you know, I'm kind of shocked, and depending on your perspective, it's either a good or bad thing. A lot of the travel experience that people will find once they, you know, finally get back out there, in some ways, feels shockingly similar to the way it did prior to the pandemic.
Yeah, that is surprising. Wonder why.
I think people have, you know, kind of come out of the woodwork, ready to get back to their normal lives. And in some ways, you know, at least for me, you know, I remember, you know, taking a few flights for work, you know, earlier in the pandemic, you know, in last summer, and feeling like everyone was very good about giving each other space, very good about wearing their masks. You know, the level of the really troubling incidents that we saw on planes was next to nothing. And then just within the last couple of months, things have really changed, you know, in some cases for the better. You know, obviously, the vaccination campaign in the United States has allowed us to open up in a way that just a few months ago felt really impossible. But the flip side of that is that, you know, people feel perhaps too comfortable. And it's brought out some real ugliness in people, especially once you get on a metal tube, which can be, you know, a stressful environment for some people. And, you know, I don't know what all of the factors are, but it's led to some really horrifying incidents in disguise.
Okay, so I asked you about what you think the industry, how the industry is going to change. It sounds like you're saying there isn't going to be that much change in the industry. It's the way we are going back to the idea of being travelers. But again, you are saying, you know, hotels probably haven't changed much. Airlines, yes, there's more flexibility. But beyond that, it is business as usual, which is surprising.
I kind of think so. I mean, there are, we're still kind of in an intermediary period where, you know, we're getting back to normal, but we're certainly not there yet. So, you know, what does that mean in the meantime? Well, it means airlines aren't flying nonstop to all of the places that they used to. And in some cases, they may not ever return to all of the nonstop destinations that they flew to, particularly when you look internationally, because international travel is going to take some time, probably years. You know, that also means that, you know, until travel demand recovers to where it was, you know, this time in 2019, you're not going to have as many options to fly to the places that you want to go. You know, you used to be able to pick, you know, basically any hour of the day to fly over to Chicago here from Minneapolis, and that's no longer the case. And it's going to be a while before that level of the frequency of flights returns. But in terms of, you know, lasting lessons for the airline industry, you know, beyond giving people additional flexibility to change their plans because the unpredictability of travel has been just so enormous within the past year, I have a hard time seeing the airline industry learning some real big lessons from this, other than just catering to the interests of travelers out there who, you know, their interests have changed because of the pandemic. You know, they are responding to the needs and wants of the everyday traveling public right now. And that's going to be their strategy going forward to climb their way out of the worst year in airline industry history.
Show today about what post-pandemic travel is looking like. And you hear one of our guests here, Kyle Potter, saying they haven't really changed that much. The way we travel has probably altered, and asking you this morning about that. Are you, what do you want to know overall about post-pandemic travel? Maybe you're making different decisions about where to go. Maybe you might have been planning a trip overseas and you're keeping it domestic. Talk to me about how you're making a decision this summer and into the fall about where to travel and how to travel. And then I wonder if some of that idea, that purpose of travel has changed for you in being, you know, homebound for a year and a half. Have you come out of this thinking there are different ways and reasons that I want to travel? So where you're going and how you're choosing and your purpose for where you're traveling and how you're going, love to hear from you on that. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. On Twitter, a listener says, I also have wanderlust, and pre-pandemic travel would be 2 to 3 times a year internationally. Since the pandemic, I've kept a lot of my trips domestic or within Minnesota. I've embarked on more spiritual nature retreat-oriented trips. Hope to leave the U.S. safely again soon. Bianca, that's, and let me remind listeners here, Bianca Alexander is with us. She's creative director and host of Conscious Living, and you can see it on PBS stations nationwide. And Kyle Potter is executive editor of The Thrifty Traveler. Bianca, this is something that I've been reading about, is more of a draw to natural places, less, you know, over curated kind of experiences, more, I don't know, more room for serendipity on a trip. What are you seeing about that?
Absolutely. That's a trend that we've been following and documenting for years. And it's a wonderful time to, you know, travel in a different way. We don't have to do things the same way we did before. And there's so many different options. I mean, there's one trip that I'm booking coming up where we're going to a retreat in Arizona. And, you know, instead of sort of doing the normal tourism, how, you know, many destinations can I see, how quickly, you know,
right,
how fast and how much, and you know, trying to check 20 things off of a list, which is how I used to travel. Now, for, you know, and it's like, and you're exhausted by the time you get home. You need a vacation after the vacation, right? Well, the type of travel that I'm doing now and that we're seeing more and more of is wellness travel. You know, there's a whole chain of hotels, healing hotels, where the experience is more of a healing and wellness experience. The trip that I've got coming up in Arizona is to a retreat where I can walk with horses and learn how to communicate better, walking in silence. And you learn so much about yourself just with, you know, experiencing the feedback, you know, from another animal that's very intuitive and sensitive. You know, I'm also signed up for a beekeeping lesson, you know, where I get to don, you know, entire beekeeping suit. I've never done this and I love the bees. And of course, you know, we want to do our part to minimize colony collapse disorder. So learning more about the bees and learning how to, you know, smoke the hive and work in tune with nature is something I've always wanted to do. So I'm, you know, looking for experiences that are allowing me to feel more grounded and more connected to earth, more connected to my spirituality and, you know, taking more of the journey within.
I really love the idea of that too. I mean, that's always been an element of travel for me is the knowledge, the seeking element of that, right? The, for me, it's literature driven, real book centric, but how can I connect what I'm reading and how can I think in broader ways about what I'm reading? And then how does that connect with where I am? I hope there is more of that and less of, as you've just noted, I go and I see 20 different things and I check it off my list and then I kind of come home and tell people, well, I went to France and I saw the Eiffel Tower, you know, more experiential, less just I'm running through this list and now I've got bragging rights to say I saw it. It's a pretty big shift if it really filters down through different layers of travel. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of the travel that has driven us in this, you know, information social media age is going somewhere so that you can get a great picture and share it on social media, right? And it's like, you know, living through your Instagram as opposed to just experiencing the experience, right?
Amen.
It's all about showing someone where I was and look at the backdrop. And, you know, we do the same when we go out to eat. It's like, let me take a picture and look at what I've done so I can, you know, as you said, bragging rights. And it's like, what have we lost inside of that in terms of our own inner journeys, whether, as you said, it's with books or, you know, meditation or yoga retreats or hiking in nature to just reconnect to ourselves in a way that, you know, it can be very nourishing for months, you know, if not years after we take the vacation. Because after all, I mean, for me, conscious living, you know, is really about enjoying the journey, not just right. the destination.
Call from Jessica in St. Paul. Hi, Jessica. It sounds like you have a trip planned. So how'd you get to the idea that, yes, we're going to take a family vacation this year?
Well, my husband's grandfather just turned 92.
Well,
we haven't seen him for quite a while. So,
it's worth a celebration, well, isn't it?
Yes. So we are a little hesitant about travel, but we decided to drive to Florida to see him.
And instead of flying, huh?
That's right.
Why?
Yeah.
Why?
We've got two young kids, and so a lot of the decisions that we're making are based on having children that are not vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. Kyle, Kyle, I wonder if you're hearing a lot of that. Families who are at different, you know, places in the vaccination situation and just deciding, hey, it is so much safer to drive. We wouldn't normally do that, but we're going to do it this year.
No question. You know, and in some ways, that has, you know, contributed to a major problem in the country with rental cars, finding rental cars, not just, you know, in the destination that you're going to in Arizona or Florida, but also, you know, in your home place, if you're going to make a big trip by road instead of by plane, you may rent a car instead of using your own. But the problem here is that there's, you know, in addition to, you know, the very valid safety concerns, there is a patchwork of, you know, what is and is not required just in order to get on a plane or in order to go somewhere, to enter a different state or definitely to enter a different country. You know, for the last year, every state and every country has set its own rules for what is required in order for, you know, a visitor to come. And so there's this perception, I think, that, you know, if you're getting on a plane, you probably need a negative COVID test or a proof of vaccination. And so for a lot of people, you know, they just wind up throwing up their hands and take the path of what they consider to be the path of least resistance. So it's going to take some time for all of this, for, you know, vaccinations rolling out to younger and younger children, as well as making sense of this patchwork of travel requirements to shake out and become clearer.
Call from Tori in St. Louis Park. Hi, Tori. What's this look like for you?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I was just going to say that in 2019, I had the opportunity to go to Cuba with a girlfriend, and we specifically made it a trip about, you know, not only satisfying our curiosities and wanting to understand what's going on there, but also, you know, lessening the impact of travel and supporting the local people more than anything. So obviously we flew there, but then once there, we did not stay in a resort. We did not stay in a hotel. We stayed at three different Airbnbs local people.
Oh, way to go.
Oh, it was great. We hired a local artist who took us on an art tour in the back streets of Havana that we would never have found. We hired a professor from the university there who sat down with us for 2 hours and told us all about how the government works there and the problems and tried to explain it all. We hired a tobacco farmer in the middle of the country, in the middle of Cuba, to explain like how all that works. And it was just like, anytime you go somewhere, you do have the opportunity to kind of just contribute more.
Tori, I love the way you worked that, because you didn't just kind of take a package, and I don't really know if that's available for Cuba, but you were very, you know, you were in pursuit of, this is what we want to learn. This is the experience we want to have. I don't know that everybody, you know, Kyle, I'd be interested in your thoughts here. If everybody has the confidence to do that, that's the way I like to plan a trip too. Maybe there will be more of that and less packaging. What do you think?
I hope so too. You know, I do think for a lot of people, it is daunting. You know, just booking a flight and finding a hotel for some people can feel like a full-time job, especially given the costs. And so, you know, doing something like a package makes the rest of your trip feel like a vacation where you don't have to worry about those things. But, you know, a lot of times, I mean, you can certainly find those packages where you can dive in deep and learn and explore. But, you know, a lot of times you find the best things just by walking down the road and seeing what's there. Walking in a place that isn't on a guide or isn't part of your package or part of a scheduled itinerary. I mean, my favorite travel moment of all time, it was sitting in a beer bar in Hanoi, Vietnam, looking over because the menu was in Vietnamese and I could not read a lick of it. And a man waved at me, walked over to my table, pointed at a few menus on the on a few items on the menu, gave me a thumbs up, and then checked in with us later to make sure everything that he recommended for us was good. My concern is that after a year in which we've been asked to literally physically distance ourselves from each other, experiences like that, the people-to-people contact, not just with fellow travelers, but with the locals who can really show you what a place is, that's going to be hard for a while. And my deepest fear is that that's never going to come back to where it was prior to the pandemic.
Yeah. You know, Bianca, I think of a night in Siena, Italy, where we got invited to the dinner that happens after they run the polio. You know, would that happen today? You know, the people in that neighborhood where they set up this big, long table right in the street in this small little neighborhood might be like, let's just not risk it. I really hear Kyle on this.
Yeah, I mean, it's understandable that we're all traveling, you know, moving forward and out of our cocoons with, you know, concerns. You know, it's been a very challenging year and we want to make sure that we don't, you know, create another pandemic, right? By not being safe, and so being mindful is important, but you know, it would be such a shame to miss, you know, the local connections and, you know, getting lost and walking and, you know, connecting to the local communities and local neighborhoods, which by the way, definitely minimizes your carbon footprint than getting on a tour bus, you know, or hopping in an Uber. So I think we would miss so much, in terms of the connections. I mean, one of the best reasons to travel is to explore other cultures and, you know, sort of step out of our own comfort zone. And we can still do that safely. We can do that standing 6 feet apart if we need to, you know, and supporting the local culture and, you know, instead of buying the usual sort of tchotchke souvenirs, many of which are, you know, manufactured in China with an incredible carbon footprint, you know, finding out and being curious, to investigate local practices and artisanal techniques. And, you know, you become more enriched in the experience. And I think we can still do it in a way that's safe, but it will take a certain amount of intention that maybe we didn't have to apply before.
How are you thinking about travel after the pandemic? Do you have a trip planned with your family? Is it within the United States, outside of the United States? How did you decide the way that you and your family would travel with all of the safety concerns and, you know, all of this experience of this last year in mind? And are you thinking about the way you're traveling with a different purpose, with, you know, bringing a different kind of sensibility to it? Kyle Potter is with us from Thrifty Traveler, and Bianca Alexander is with us from Conscious Living. And I want to take a call here from Megan. Megan, thank you so much for waiting through the news break. Really appreciate that. What do you think?
Sure, of course.
Yeah, what are you thinking on this?
So this has been a lovely conversation. I really appreciated your last guest, Tori, and her comments about travel to Cuba. I think in the spirit of that and moving the idea forward to in the kind of post-pandemic era, and even when I say post-pandemic, I say post-pandemic as an American who's had an opportunity to be vaccinated. And so as we are talking about, like, travel after COVID, I mean, I personally have had the opportunity to book a flight to go visit family and friends in Rwanda in the end of June and July. And I'm thrilled. And it's a place I've always wanted to visit. I'm very excited. But we'll be doing, you know, walking through markets, you know, camping, you know, visiting lakes, having just a beautiful time with, you know, local community. But I think the really important part is I will be there as one of the few people in that area who's been vaccinated.
Right.
And I will behave and I will act as if I don't have my vaccination, in large part because, you know, when we think about travel, I think we have to recognize now that we have an ability, unfortunately, to spread illness and disease around the world, and yet each nation responds as an individual nation.
Oh, well said. Without
being, yes, and without being able to really have a robust global health plan. Like, as just a brief observation is that when we're looking at nearing 70% of Americans vaccinated, and we're prioritizing, you know, everyone above the age of 12 right now, you know, we have doctors and nurses around the world who are waiting in line. And that is something that especially anybody who is going to get on an international flight, I hope we are thinking of that, aware of that, and modifying all of our plans to recognize that when we travel, we can, unfortunately, be a vector for anything else that may be out there. And we really do have to behave in a way that recognizes that risk. And as travelers, we should accept that we have to modify our behavior to protect the populations of any place we're traveling to as much as possible. Otherwise, we're kind of not being responsible global citizens.
Megan, I wish you well on what sounds like an incredible trip. But I'm so glad you called with this kind of sensibility, because Bianca, I've never thought before in any of the international travel that I've done that I could be, you know, obviously carbon footprint, yes, but that I could, you know, be carrying something into a community that could be pretty disturbing for that community. This might be something, you know, as what you do for Conscious Living that you think about more specifically. So how do you think about that?
Absolutely. You know, we have the responsibility of being, you know, civilized Western, quote unquote, civilized Western nations with more resources at our disposal to be able to afford to get on a plane and to be able to afford vaccinations. And so doing so mindfully and really thinking about what is the impact on the culture, you know, what is the impact on the community of the places that I'm traveling to, both from a health perspective, but also, you know, on the local economy. You know, one great example of that, I've spent a lot of time in Indonesia and traveling to Bali. And because of just the explosion in tourism since, I guess, the Eat, Pray, Love and, you know, all of the sort of fascination with the culture. Unfortunately, the farmers in Bali that have traditionally relied upon rice farming, traditional rice farming practices to earn their living and to sustain their families, have been selling their farms in order to become drivers. So they sell the farm can buy a car so that they can be basically a driver, because there's a good money in, you know, because the island is so spread out from destination to destination, they can make a lot of money, you know, driving tourists, you know, from the beach to the mountains, to the jungle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's this phenomenon that's happened there. And I really have, you know, my heart's gone out to the people on the island of Bali and Indonesia, because in the past year, there was no tourism. And unfortunately, they had sold and destroyed all of their farms, their local, you know, practices that allow them to sustain themselves in order to support tourism. So thinking about, you know, every trip that we take is having an impact on the destination, particularly where it's, you know, high tourism destination, and just being more mindful with, you know, how we might support the local economies and support the local indigenous cultures that will be there long after we take our vacation.
Call from Mitchell in Plymouth, Minnesota. Mitchell, sounds like you have a trip on the books. Where are you going?
Yes, my girlfriend and I are going to Iceland towards mid-July.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and that has been pretty interesting in trying to figure out and how we're going to get there, especially with COVID being a deciding factor. So right now, we've been kind of struggling keeping abreast of kind of how restrictions are going to apply to the trip.
Right.
And trying to factor that into our stay in Iceland, as well as pre-planning and getting there. So right now, we are looking at, we have to take a rapid test in within 72 hours of our arrival there, and get that into the Icelandic government. And then once we land, because we're fully vaccinated, we have our two shots, we take another rapid test as we enter the country and quarantine until those results are out.
Wow. Okay.
Yes. So there's going to be a lot of tests.
Yeah.
And then, I'm not sure if the policy has changed on this, but I think we also have to provide another rapid test 72 hours to the United States government before our departure, which has had some effects on, like, what we're doing there, because we have to be back in a populated area to get the test done.
Okay, so you've raised a lot of really good questions here. Kyle, I have found this kind of confusing because the policies seem to be in flux. If you have been vaccinated and you have the card to show that, are you still going to be required by a number of countries to show, you know, to have these rapid tests and show that you are negative to get in and out?
It just depends on where you're going, but your guest is right. You know, you still do need, no matter where you're going, no matter your vaccination status, the United States government still requires you to get a negative COVID test, have the test taken no more than 3 days before you fly back to the United States. And then you start, you know, looking at where you're going. If you're, you know, flying to, you know, a foreign country, they may also require a negative COVID test to get in on top of proof of vaccination or perhaps in place of.
Wow.
Depending on where you're going, you know, you may need to take as many as 3 COVID tests in order to get in and get back home. And as you noted, this is really in flux. We have a lot of guides on our site trying to keep people up to date on all of the changes in, you know, if you're trying to get to Italy or Spain or Iceland or Mexico and throughout the Caribbean. But, you know, these things do quite literally change day to day. So, you know, having a good resource to at least get an initial, you know, glance at what might be required for your trip. But there really is no replacement for constantly, and I do mean constantly, checking, you know, with the embassy in the country that you're planning to visit, because these things are changing quite rapidly.
Okay. I think we have a call about that to Tim in Marquette. Tim, it sounds like you're in the middle of that kind of thing. What's the trip you have planned?
Yeah. you know, we're planning to go to Rome, Italy in a couple of weeks.
Uh-huh.
And the planning for it has been stressful, to say the least. It's been quite extensive. As your previous caller just mentioned, we've got the multiple tests to take. Italy is very strict about it. And we're going to do the PCR. We're going to do the within 72 hours, then we get another test in Atlanta. And then when we get to Rome, we have another rapid test.
Wow.
And then, And so, and then we, in the process, we've been calling the consulate because things change rapidly. And we've been checking with a newspaper out of Rome that's in English called The Local. And they've been updating travelers about it because they want to help. And, you know, we just have this small window of opportunity. Our daughter's there, and we want to visit her while she's still in Rome and have kind of a, you know, an expert guide. And so, and also, it's just something we've been planning for a very long time, and we were led to believe it was okay. And then we also have the airlines to deal with who have been changing flights periodically, randomly. We'll get an email that says, there's been a change, and oh, great, more stress.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've noticed that, too, that their schedules are changing, right, as with capacity loads and new restrictions. Bianca, I wonder if you've got some advice on, I mean, obviously Tim is staying pretty flexible on this and he wants to get to Europe at this moment. What do you think overall about going now, planning now, or waiting to see how this evolves? You know, I feel really torn about that, right? And we're eager to travel. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see both sides. I mean, you have to be comfortable with whatever you do. You don't want to go on vacation if it's going to completely stress you out the entire time. That sort of is, you know, makes the whole purpose not useful, right? But by the same time, you know, it's like we all have to, you know, be willing to step out. And I think you just have to be mindful with, you know, what your goals are. Why are you traveling? Why are you leaving? And also, you know, staying aware of the fact that, you know, you're going to have to be more patient than usual. There's, you know, probably going to be more, you know, cancellations and changes than what you may have anticipated previous, you know, prior to the pandemic, and just sort of being prepared for the fact that it may be a bit of a windy road as opposed to a straight line, so that, you know, when you get to the airport and you reach these obstacles, you don't sort of unravel, you know, and sort of, you know, throw yourself into the anxiety, which is just going to make your day
right.
So much worse and everyone around you so much worse. So it's like really kind of, you know, coming forward with a thick skin and just, you know, being an adult and recognizing that life is life and we don't necessarily have control over everything. And that's a part of the journey too, so that it doesn't, you know, sort of take the joy out of the fact that you're taking a trip in the first place.
I just want to say something real quick here, Bianca, before we grab a call, about, again, this idea of maybe letting your curiosity lead you into a more personalized experience and not being afraid to do that. I hear Kyle loud and clear on booking the flights and all this uncertainty and getting a hotel. But having some confidence in being able to create a trip that really speaks to your own interests and is less cookie cutter. Maybe you have some ideas, maybe some advice on that.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I do whenever I travel is just researching the local indigenous culture and history. I mean, there's so much richness wherever you go. Every destination has its traditions. Every destination has its culture and heritage. And, you know, honoring the places that you're going, whether it's internationally or locally, researching, you know, what are the local people doing? What are the local sort of stories and folklore that can kind of guide you into interesting places, interesting locations and historical sites that are kind of off the beaten trail. And that's something that I always look for. And you never know what you're going to get. You know, you get on Google, you do some research, and, you know, you look at reviews. And part of that is the excitement of not knowing what to expect.
The anticipation, right, is half the fun. Okay, a quick call here from Victor in St. Paul. Victor, it sounds like you've traveled overseas already, yeah?
Well, no, I just booked a flight
to Moscow.
I just traveled to D.C. a few weeks ago, but I booked a flight to Moscow in summer.
Well.
And I'm telling you, the biggest shock that I have, and I think a lot of people will have, is the price of the tickets. Base economy, $1,500. I don't think I ever paid that in my life.
So the fares to Moscow were substantially increased?
Yeah. Yeah, wow. I mean, I'm telling you, yes, I used to, like, $1,100 and I think, I wonder if that will stay, but I hope not, but that, okay. I think, be the biggest shock.
We got the thrifty traveler here. He'll know. Kyle, what do you think? What about airline fees?
You know, this is a moving picture. For the last year, for most of the last year anyway, airfare has been about as cheap, if not at record low levels, as any time we've ever seen. And this is what we do. We find flight deals for a living. Within the past couple of months, especially as you look at travel for the summer, airfare has definitely crept up. By and large, I would say it isn't still yet as expensive as it was, this time in 2019. But, you know, summer travel is the most popular travel season, and airlines know that. And this time around, airlines know that people are eager to get back to see family for the first time, or eager just to get out of the house. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in some cases, you are going to find some flights that seem pretty exorbitantly expensive. That being said, you know, the best thing that people can do as they look into planning their trip, their first big trip, wherever it is, we have something we call the flight first rule. And it's exactly what it sounds like. If you start planning your trip by looking for flights first, even just by shifting your planned travel dates by a day or two, that can save you hundreds. And for international travel, sometimes it can save you $1,000 on a single plane ticket. And you start thinking about, you know, traveling with a companion or a family, those savings can be massive by giving yourself that extra flexibility on the front end.
Okay,
rather than locking your dates in.
Let me make sure I understand that. So, hey, we thought we wanted to travel in these 2 weeks in August, but we do have a little bit of flexibility. What if I just sit there for a bit and I noodle around and I plug in different dates for the flights? Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I mean. It honestly can be that simple. Not even just, you know, going in September instead of August. Sometimes, you know, by departing on a Wednesday instead of a Thursday or a Friday, you can save $200, $300 or more. So using tools like Google Flights, Google has, you know, what we consider the absolute best search engine to find flights and to find the best deal, because it will show you exactly on that calendar, you know what, if you depart, you know, on Wednesday instead of Thursday, the fare is going to be $100 less.
It's worth it. Again, if you're taking a whole family, right, you're saving $400 one way. Really good advice. Hey, thank you, too. This is this feels optimistic. Maybe we're still a little bit ahead of the curve, right? I'm not sure how many people are ready to book that trip, but Bianca and Kyle, real pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank
Kyle
you.
Kyle Potter is executive editor of The Thrifty Traveler, and Bianca Alexander is the creative director and host of Conscious Living, now airing on PBS stations nationwide.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. If you'd like to hear more conversations like this, subscribe to our podcast. And thanks for listening.